you, as always, Muslim Abbas, there for us. And we move to some other news now, because with infection soaring, governments in the United Kingdom and across Europe are desperately trying to get a handle on the pandemic through measures like national lockdowns and mass immunization programs. In Britain, more than 3.8 million people have already received the COVID jab, and in other EU countries, mass vaccination programs are underway. Saeed Poreza fills us in this update.
With only one way out of the pandemic, no building in Britain is being overlooked in a bid to vaccinate the nation. This church in northwest England, the latest experiencing its own conversion from church to vaccination center. One of 10 opening this week, as the government announced the rollout was headed in the right direction.
We've got the light at the end of the tunnel with the vaccine rollout. We just got to stay at home as much as possible, unless there are really strong, limited, exceptional reasons.
The government's aim is to immunize 15 million people in the high-risk group by the middle of next month and another 17 million by spring, when they're hoping to ease lockdown restrictions.
We are aiming to complete all of our residents in care homes by the end of next week. We're aiming to complete everybody over 70, all the clinically extremely vulnerable, and all health and social care staff by the middle of February.
But as mass immunization in the UK goes into overdrive, how are some other COVID hotspots in the continent faring? In neighboring France, a nationwide campaign to inoculate people over 75 has gotten underway, as officials seek to ease concern about deliveries of vaccines. Spain, too, has launched its inoculation program, while it tries to avoid a full-scale lockdown.
We do not contemplate at this time any home confinement. We overcame the second wave without home confinement.
Mass vaccination is also ongoing in other rich European countries, such as Italy, the epicenter of the pandemic in Europe, as well as in Austria, Norway, and Switzerland, where the fight to push down high infection figures is ongoing. Back in the UK, the latest measure, a closure of travel corridors. As of Monday, all arrivals in the UK will have to quarantine for 10 days and show proof of a negative test. The government is fearful new variants of coronavirus could derail the vaccine rollout.
We've seen the rising numbers of infections of coronavirus, both domestically and internationally. We've taken the view that it's now the right time, as we're looking at the data, to take some extra steps.
Accused of moving too slowly in keeping COVID out, the British government is now desperate to stay ahead in getting jabs into people's arms and fast. And as for the rest of the continent, the race against the clock is on. Saeed Poreza, London.
This is European News Bulletin broadcast by IRIB English Radio. In this program, we covered the most recent developments all over Europe. You can listen to this program on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
Ahmed Caballo will commemorate a very special anniversary, and one, dare I say, that would have passed many of us by.
Yes, so January the 17th was the 60th anniversary of what people are calling one of the most significant assassinations of the 21st century, and that is of Patrice Lumumba, the first democratically elected Prime Minister of the Congo. Now, the Congo, many people estimate to be the wealthiest country in the world based on the natural resources that lie within its borders. But according to the GDP, it's one of the poorest countries in the world. And that's because before Patrice Lumumba and shortly after Patrice Lumumba was assassinated, the wealth of the Congo has been used to enrich European powers and American elites. And that is why he was assassinated. So as the years have gone on, we've found out that it wasn't only the Belgian authorities that were responsible for his assassination, but they were in cahoots with President Eisenhower, the CIA, and MI6, who all wanted to get rid of the man who wanted to nationalize natural resources and make sure that the workers in the Congo that produced the wealth that the Europeans and the Americans rely on, were paid a fair wage for their work. And what's worrying about this is, on the day of its independence, on June 30th, 1960, Patrice Lumumba made this very passionate speech. And some people say that it was this speech that made him a marked man, that made him be seen as a potential threat to Western interests.
Quick reaction and into the comments there, Ahmed.
Yeah, so you notice the Belgian king did not clap at the idea that the Congolese were no longer to be treated as second-class citizens or they would be paid a fair wage, and that was the reason. Now we'll get on to some of the tweets. Rubber Q says, on this day, 1961, Patrice Lumumba, freedom fighter and anti-imperialist, was kidnapped and assassinated by firing squad. After urgent Belgian and CIA directives were issued, his body was desecrated and his legacy of national uplift in the Congo was shattered. He died at the age of 35. And one final point, his body was dismembered and put in sulfuric acid because they did not want the symbol of what he represent to live on long after he was killed.
All right, your next story.
This is an interesting one. So it was the number one trending topic in the United States, and it was after Donald Trump, or after Trump. And it was quite interesting to me because so many Americans are saying, after Trump, everything will be great again. It was great before. Donald Trump was a small interruption of how of American politics, which was a great force for good in the world. But now he's gone, everything will get back to normal. Now we'll read a couple of these tweets and we'll get into some of my thoughts and analysis. So Untrumped says, after Trump, I will have hope again. Jay Braps says, after Trump, I will channel my energy into healing from the abuse and trauma of his administration and get back to being a happy and healthy human being. Now, one of the problems with this thing that was trending is it doesn't spare a thought to the people of the Global South whose lives were decimated by Barack Obama's administration, by George W. Bush's administration, and Bill Clinton's administration before that. Although Donald Trump has done many terrible things, 330,000 Americans have died because of COVID, they do not seem to care or have any understanding of the true horrors of U.S. empire, the children in Fallujah that are born with birth deficiencies, the over a million dead in Iraq and Afghanistan, the predator drone strikes enacted by Barack Obama's administration. All those people are insignificant because the only problem in the U.S. system, in the eyes of those tweeting, was Donald Trump, and that is very problematic. And we've got one final tweet by Nada. She says, after Trump, he'll be the first president in 152 years to skip his successor's inauguration. He'll be forever known as a one-term, twice-impeached loser. He'll be the first president to have so many terrible first president awards. Tired of so much winning.
Well, we'll see pretty soon whether or not this rather rosy, tainted image is correct. Ahmed Kabbalah, thank you very, very much. And we move on to some other stories now because the Israeli regime have advanced plans to build nearly 800 homes in settlements across the occupied West Bank. According to anti-settlement monitoring group Peace Now, Tel Aviv authorized the plans on Sunday evening in a last-minute bid of approval. This just a week before close ally to the Israeli regime, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Trump, leaves office. According to Peace Now, 90% of the settlement units lie deep within the occupied West Bank. Both the European Union and the United Kingdom have condemned the move, both stating that it undermines the prospect of a viable two-state solution. Now, Yusuf Al-Khaloo, independent journalist, is with us from London. Yusuf, the application, the decision, these were all rushed through. Wasn't this about making the most of Trump's final days in office here for Netanyahu?
Yes, indeed, Amina. If it is the house cleaning for Trump to finalize his promises to his friend in need, Netanyahu. I guess the green light which Israel enjoys is because of the impunity and the support, the green light given to Israel by Trump. So it's a matter of speeding, accelerating these settlements before Biden takes office. And we know that Netanyahu has been favored a lot by Trump's reckless decisions And we know that the story of Jerusalem leaving the embassy and not considering Israel's illegal occupation illegal anymore. So it's a house cleaning in my mind. And I think Palestinians, they do not really pin high hopes on the next president, Biden, when it comes to Israel's violation of international law.
Why do you think that is, Yusuf?
It's because the American administration has never been an honest peace broker. And Palestinians, somehow they have doubts about Biden's if he's going to be like pro-democracy or let's say respects international law. But on the main side, Palestinians they demand Biden to restore the international system, to allow Palestinians to have their dignity, to pressure Israel to end its prolonged occupation. But as I said, doubts are high, and when it comes to the U.S. administration, the policy stays the same, but people come and go, different faces for the same currency.
Indeed, and you mentioned dignity there, but also health we should like to mention, because we've seen much being made of Israel rolling out its vaccine, yet Palestinians are on the sidelines still waiting. Briefly, Yusuf, your thoughts on that?
Well, Israel prides itself as a country that managed to vaccinate about 20% of its population. But unfortunately, the international regime, or let's say the international community, forgets that Israel occupies a large number of Palestinians under the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem. And Israel hesitates, or let's say refuses, to allow these vaccinations to reach the Palestinian population, or at least to vaccinate Palestinian key workers or paramedics who transfer patients across checkpoints when it comes to the bantustans of the West Bank. And also, let's not forget the thousands of Palestinian political prisoners held in Israeli jails in crowded cells. And those vulnerable people, they risk the lives. Israel disregards the health of those people. Many of them, they've got chronic diseases. And we hear from officials in Israel that they do care about democracy, or let's say their fellow human beings. But we know from previous experiences, Israel considers Palestinians subhumans. And unfortunately, the world is watching. The WHO also pressures Israel to abide by the international law by allowing these vaccinations to reach Palestinians. But all these calls fall in deaf ears.
Same story, unfortunately, Yusuf. Thank you so very much. Now we move across to Italy, where the country's Prime Minister, Giuseppe Conte, has announced that Italy will enter into a new series of restrictions aimed at containing the resistance COVID-19 surge. Under the new plans, all non-essential businesses have been closed and non-essential travel between provinces barred. The opening of ski resorts has also been postponed for a second time. Italy has been operating on a three-tier set of restrictions, with red zones put on partial lockdown, allowing outings only for urgent reasons like work, grocery shopping, or the pharmacy. Now the new measures will stay in force until the 5th of March this year. Snowfall and cold weather conditions have disrupted land and sea traffic in Turkey's largest city, Istanbul, on Monday. Traffic was brought to a halt by a blanket of snow covering the city, with some cars stalled or skidding on the roads. The heavy snowfall, which is expected to continue into Wednesday, has prompted Istanbul's Disaster Coordination Center to issue warnings for citizens. The city will also be housing some 1,200 homeless people in hotels during the freezing conditions. Robert Inlakesh, they're counting down the days until Joe Biden takes office. But what does this mean in terms of real-world politics right now?
Well, the story that we're looking at today is an intriguing one because, of course, Joe Biden has sworn to be a lot better than the previous president, still president right now, Donald Trump, when it comes to border control and immigration into the United States. But this story here is perhaps shining a light on what is to perhaps come. A Biden aide has told 8,000 Honduran migrants that heading to the United States, that they should turn back and that the border would not be open immediately to them And on top of that as well, other people close to Joe Biden, the incoming Biden administration, have said that there will be changes taking place. However, they will not take place immediately. And so this will take quite a bit of time to come into effect. And what we're seeing is a reluctance to take in many people that Joe Biden has sworn that he would perhaps take in, or that at least he'd deal with it better. We do know, however, that Joe Biden was vice president under Barack Obama. Now, Barack Obama deported a lot more people than Donald Trump deported. And those infamous cages where children were being kept in the Trump years were actually built under the Obama administration, where, of course, Joe Biden was vice president. So a lot of people are calling into question as to whether Joe Biden is going to be that much better. There is a claim that this will change, but we're going to have to see how this all turns out.
And the reaction to this has been what, Rob?
There's been a mixture of reactions. Of course, as you can imagine, this story is whipping up a lot of tension, especially between Trump supporters and Biden supporters. The first commenting on this, we have here a Twitter user saying, hilarious to watch racist idiots go crazy. Over 8,000 people, and claim Joe Biden is going to allow an invasion. In reality, Biden is doing the opposite of what he promised. It looks like he won't even consider letting them in. Then we got another one here from a, I suspect, Trump supporter, last beacon of hope, God bless America. That's their account. And they say, and so it begins because phony Biden told them they were welcome to break into America. Say goodbye to safety, jobs, and resources. The Biden looting begins. Migrant caravanning Guatemala pushes through border from Honduras, heading to the United States of America. A lot of fear-mongering there, as you could imagine.
And attached to this story, though a separate one, very briefly, just bring us up to speed with, well, the fate of some of those who protested in the summer demonstrations against the government in Beijing.
Well, this is a very interesting story to put alongside our previous one. That's the story of, specifically in this case, five protesters who are apparently prominent. We don't know their names. They haven't revealed their identities, who have are essentially seeking asylum inside of the United States. And they're being helped along by this organization based in Washington called the Hong Kong Democracy Council. Again, a lot of people are called into question, why would the Hong Kong Democracy Council based in Washington be helping these sort of people? We also know that the National Endowment for Democracy has been feeding these protests, which have been ongoing, as an attempt to get at the Chinese authorities inside of Hong Kong over a security bill that was drafted and, of course, was changed. So what we have here is an example of the United States looking to take in people with ease from Hong Kong. We know that the United Kingdom has offered for people in Hong Kong who were born prior to the 1997 hand back to Beijing of Hong Kong, that they would offer them citizenship now as well.
Give me your last tweet on this one.
So the final tweet that we have here is from some guy with opinions who says, let this sink in. Not a single protester has been killed by Hong Kong police in years of on and off protests. This despite them being so violent and having killed police. Democrats go crazy at what happened at the Capitol. But when it happens in Hong Kong, it's revolution and social media promotes it.
All right, we leave it there, Robert Inlakesh, and we leave you there. Stay tuned.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
Aqil Jawadi talks about the various keys of life and has brought about this book to be a companion for the very famous Mafatil Jiran, where one is a tool or the keys for paradise, and this book, of course, are the keys of life.
The Keys of Life, a program designed to tell you that what Islam gives you will help get you home with joy and faithfulness. So, well, listen to
The Keys of Life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must Open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. My name is Sheikh Zayd al-Salami.
We spoke about a variety of things in the previous episode, making sure that, you know, we stay away from prolonging our sitting in the bathroom. We make sure that we observe certain things in the hammam, for example. Yeah, and there's a lot of these kind of hygienic things that we need to observe. You know, that one hadith says that it being makruh for you to brush your teeth while you are in the shower, while you are in the hammam. And ultimately, one of the important physical things that's also, as I said, connected to the spiritual side or the mental side is being a gluttonous person or kathratul akl or becoming a cool person. It does, you know, bring about a lot of bad, negative outcomes. Let me read this hadith. It says, "Man kathura ta'amuhu, saquma badanuh, wa qasa qalbuh." Someone who eats excessively will have a lot of illnesses in their body, and also their heart will become qasi. They will have a hard heart. Anyway, continuing on to talk about the non-material factors that bring about a person's sickness. Imam Ridha salamullahi alayhi, this is the first hadith that Sheikh Jawadi Amuli mentions. I just want to remind my dear brothers and sisters about the important point that we mentioned in our last episode, that Ayatollah Jawadi repeats twice as it being an important point to remember, that these are hadith could be looking sometimes, they could be looking at certain conditions, at certain individuals, to a certain time, to a certain place, etc., etc. So they shouldn't be taken in the sense of universal if it's not applicable to an individual or a case, especially if there's going to be a recommendation from a physician, from a doctor, from a specialist, from a nutritionist who's saying, well, no, this is good for you, that is good for, that is bad for you. You know, you might come across a hadith that says eating, and there is, this is a real example, eating a sour apple is bad for you because it brings about nisyan, it brings about forgetfulness. Maybe a doctor might say, actually, one of the good things in your case, in your situation, in your scenario, is for you to have a sour apple, for you to eat a sour apple in the morning, for example, whatever it may be. But the non-material side of things is also something very important for us to look into.
Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When when growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
You know, if we want to take the empiric approach and try to, you know, look at it in the very, very materialist kind of scientist kind of way, we're not going to get to any kind of results. Because all of this is based on what Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam have said through, number one, the physical material side of things, but also number two, the devotional, ta'abbudi, spiritual side of things through the information that they have received from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Imam Radha salamullahi alayhi, he says, كُلَّمَا أَحْدَثَ الْعِبَادُ مِنَ الذُّنُوبِ مَا لَمْ يَكُونُوا يَعْمَلُونَ أَحْدَثَ اللَّهُ لَهُمْ مِنَ الْبَلَاءِ مَا لَمْ يَكُونُوا يَعْرِفُونَ. This is really an important hadith for us to look into and ponder on. He says, the more the creation commits sins, new sins, كُلَّمَا أَحْدَثَ الْعِبَادُ مِنَ الذُّنُوبِ, the more the people commit new sins that previous people had not committed, مَا لَمْ يَكُونُوا يَعْمَلُونَ, that they didn't commit, or previous people did not commit, أَحْدَثَ اللَّهُ لَهُمْ, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will inflict them with misfortunes, with calamities, in our case here what we're talking about, with sicknesses. And even Ayatollah Jawadi, when he's translating this hadith into Farsi, between brackets, when he translates the words al-bala by it referring to a misfortune, a calamity, and then between brackets he mentions sicknesses, ma lam yakunu ya'rifun, that something that has never been precedented before, that didn't exist before, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will inflict them because of their sins, because of their newly innovated sins that they are committing, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will inflict them with certain sicknesses, with certain illnesses, with certain calamities and misfortunes that they didn't know about, or that previous ummas didn't even have. We can see this, unfortunately, maybe in today's society, in this world, with AIDS and all of these other unprecedented sicknesses that do exist. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, wassalatu wassalamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time. Memories fade like a dusty window pane, and you can't see your past no more. The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be there, be there.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
U.S. Gun Lobby, the National Rifle Association of America, has filed for bankruptcy in the Northern District of Texas, where it will reincorporate as a nonprofit, leaving New York State, where it was founded in 1871. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by John Coeli Ryder. This article is published under the heading, U.S. National Rifle Association Files for Bankruptcy Month After Suit Revealed Internal Culture of Fraud. Here's the details. Prayers. That is what many opponents of the U.S. National Rifle Association Riley stated in response to news that the pro-gun lobby group had officially filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy recently in the United States. In a statement on its website, the NRA, which promotes the interests of the gun industry and gun owners, unbothered by the unparalleled level of gun violence seen in the country, said it was leaving New York State, where it is currently registered, to restructure in Texas as part of a new strategic plan it is implementing. Thoughts and prayers to the NRA, fanatical fiends who bear the blood of tens of thousands on their paws, said Representative Bill Pascrell in response. The world will be a better place when the NRA is finally destroyed. Looks like that day is closer. While the NRA claims in the statement that it is in its strongest financial condition in years, it said the strategic plan involves utilizing the protection of the bankruptcy court and dumping New York so that it can reincorporate in Texas to continue its activities without such a corrupt political and regulatory environment. Brady United, which has called for the NRA's dissolution for decades, said, news of the NRA filing for bankruptcy is just the latest proof that the NRA has cheated its members and American taxpayers in pursuit of an extremist agenda that has made country markedly less safe. David Hogg, one of the survivors of the 2018 Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School shooting in Parkland, Florida, who later became a vocal gun control advocate, was among those who welcomed the news recently and thanked all the tireless activism over the years focused on NRA's deadly brand of influence peddling. Don't read this as the NRA is going away, Hawks added. They are not yet, he said, but this is one step closer. In August, as Common Dreams reported at the time, New York Attorney General Letitia James filed a lawsuit against the NRA, which sought to dissolve the organization based on widespread evidence of corruption and financial self-dealing that violated the state's requirements for nonprofit status. In a tweet recently responding to the NRA's move to divorce itself from the New York, James said, "The NRA's claimed financial status has finally met its moral status, bankrupt. While we review its bankruptcy filing," she added, "we will not allow the NRA to use this or any other tactic to evade accountability and my office oversight." The bankruptcy news follows leadership shakeups and scandals and allegations of financial mismanagement at the top, prompting a suit last summer by New York Attorney General Letitia James. The AG accused the NRA leadership led by CEO Wayne Lapierre of tax fraud and diverting association funds for personal use. The self-dealing resulted in $63 million in losses over the 3 years, she said. Controversial Lapierre famously declared, "The only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun." The group has about 5 million members. The NRA TV, the association online video channel, ran from 2016 to 2019. An NRA countersuit accused James of impeding the group's First Amendment rights and said her suit was without a shred of evidence. James shot back, saying, "The NRA's claimed financial status has finally met its moral status, bankrupt." She said the group will not avoid accountability or her office with the move. The NRA said Marshall Smith, a former top executive at 3M Company, will serve as chief restructuring officer. The group has formed a committee to study opportunities for relocating segments of its business operations to Texas or other states. In the meantime, the NRA's general business operations will remain in Fairfax.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, you are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we are going to look at some principles of upbringing children so that the audience gets a detailed description of the matter concerning how to raise their children Islamically. The main source is the book Children in the Quran and Sunnah, compiled by Ayatollah Ray Shahri. And today we have in our studio guest speaker Sister Salma Khalfan, who is an Islamic researcher in the Hawza Ilmiya of Qum. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program, Sister Salma.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here as well.
Thank you for being here. So in our previous episodes, we've been talking about how the outside influences our children and how it prevents us from proper Islamic child upbringing, but that we are able to, you know, work with it. So we have to learn how to work with those factors and include them in how we upbring our children. So we've been talking about the TV, and then you talked about books.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Books are a great influence to our children, the right way and the wrong as well. In fact, the good influence plays a very important role, because it's like the best friend of a child. And I think it's even in a tradition mentioned that books are the best friend of
Imam Ali has
said. Exactly. So books should be like given to a child so that he can feel that it's an interesting thing. Books should be bought to a child. Good books should be bought to a child. Mothers should take, you know, interest in showing the children good books and reading them out and everything. But there's a great danger when the children begin reading the wrong type of books. And just as books can be a good influence, they can also be a destructive one, as I say.
Yeah, definitely.
So a bad book can spoil the mind of a child, filling it with poisonous ideas and views. Many books for children are filled with violence, fantasies, romance. Comics and other such books may be entertaining, but have little or no benefit for the child at all.
Yeah.
You'll feel just like this is something to pass your time, laughing away and everything. That's the what life is about. There's no message more in them, or teasing people, making a joke out of them. You know, comics, unfortunately, exactly. Sometimes we indulged in such kind of mistakes. But then if you go and see, they taught us nothing, zero. And I feel that if we would have replaced them with good material, like beneficial material, we would be better than what we are right now, right?
So, and also, I feel like there are times when parents feel like, where did the child learn this, for instance? Yeah. Then they'll realize, oh, it's from what they read, but they didn't think about that, you see.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes parents, you know, they feel so proud of the children that they're reading so much. So go and buy as many books as you want, but not looking at the content of what they're buying, you know, whether it's violence, whether it's fantasies, whether it's comics, whether it's, you know, romance or something like that. Unfortunately, till now, we have people to complain, and they say that we don't have any Islamic material, so we read books like this, you know, like fantasies and romance books. But now I think it's very wrong, because there are books replaced like that. And I have very many, you know, like
Bintul Huda has written books that include romance. It's like, you know, the halal way of romance. Some people feel like they want to read about romance. There should be books that portray romance in the right way.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
The Islamic way.
Not ruin a person's, you know, desires and that they feel, you know, completely
like they don't
helpless.
Get it, yeah.
And such books are actually making a person like that. You know, they feel the wrong ways to satisfy themselves instead of the right way, the way you mentioned that there are books like that to show the right kind of romance, a family life, you know, how it goes, how the husband is treating the wife so nicely, and how what kinds of conversations take place between them. That's the halal romance, right? So it's not enough to encourage children to read, encourage them, you know, to that if you read however many books you read, you'll get smarter and that, and then leave them to choose whatever they wish, you know. Most children will choose junk literature. Children like fun, you know. They like choosing things that they satisfy their eyes. And
exactly.
You know, like picture, fantasies, comics, and things like that. So they always choose the wrong one. So parents should be very much alert when they are buying them books, what kind of books to encourage them to read.
Very true. So we're just taking a short break, inshallah, and we're going to get back for more on this topic after the break. Stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back to IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. The show is Islamic Upbringing with our sister Salma Khalfan. So we've been talking about how books can affect the child and how we should be careful on what they read.
And what the choice the parents should make for the child, yeah?
Yeah.
In a way that the child even enjoys that same choice. Doesn't mean dictating them that you have to buy this, encouraging them, telling them the stories of such things before they buy the books, you know?
Yeah.
Encouraging them to read that kind of literature. So it's not necessarily boring books or something like that. But those books that have value in their stories, you know, in their language. Many classical books are very interesting for children. Like I remember in my time there was this book, and till now it's very famous, The Little Women.
Yeah.
And The Little Men. It has a wide variety of different kind of experiences that a woman from a young childhood faces to the adulthood, and the challenges and how they tackle with the challenges in a very decent and very modest way. With modest feelings and valuable morals.
It's like you find very few of these kind of books now.
And they are actually, if we have to find them out only.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that some children should be forced to read Islamic books. That's the best thing, of course. There are very many good Islamic books also. Small stories for children. Nowadays, you know, there's so much books to offer our young readers that we don't have any excuse to say that, okay, now no literature is written.
Available
or something like that. But of course, there are books, and if they don't feel like reading such books, there are many stories that children can read, and they can also, develop their skills in the process and not get spoiled through the influence of bad literature.
Exactly.
And another good idea is to get some Islamic books for the children to read. I believe strongly that whatever is formed in a young child's mind, the interest, it remains.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if from a childhood such books are shown, for example, stories of the prophets, stories of the imams, stories of good things, you know, that happened to people, stories of the ulama with pictures, and we have, alhamdulillah, a wide variety here in the Islamic Republic of Iran, which many books are also translated.
Yeah.
So if we show these books, the child, you know, his innate disposition is to be attracted towards these things. So he won't feel good when he looks at such books that are not in his fitrat. So such books should be introduced from a childhood age. As the child grows into a teen, then they will feel whatever is introduced to them and encouraged to them to read, they will read those kind of books. But if filthy literature is shown to them, then once they get into that routine, they would, you know, let go. It'll be very hard for them to let go.
Exactly.
So introducing good variety literature to the children will make them influence in a better way than they are supposed to be influenced by through books.
Yeah, definitely, inshallah. Thank you very much. We're going to take a short break, inshallah, and after the break, we're going to continue this discussion. Please stay tuned.
Ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal khayrat.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, raise your children to have three features: love for your Prophet, love for his household, and reciting the Quran.
Okay, so you're back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran, and this is Islamic Upbringing. So we have been talking about books and how to make books part of a child's life and how to, you know, choose the right books for them to read.
Now I wish to talk about the influence that friends bring about in a child.
Yeah.
When he's a small child, the mother or the parents usually choose the friends for the child, the way they take them out to house of their own friends, or the play group that they choose for a child to play among.
Yeah.
So that's an easy thing. But as the child grows, what kinds of friends is very important that they would influence in the wrong or the right way.
It's not like you'll be choosing. The child will choose themselves.
Yeah. But you'll be teaching guiding them the values from a young age of what kind of children to play with.
Yeah.
The children who are understanding, the children who are not aggressive. All these kind of characteristics in a child would shape the child's mind to choose a good friend for the child. He will see the values, you see, that were in good children, and he would choose the same kind of children. And of course, at some point in time also, the parents lose touch with the friends of the child, but they should always be vigilant,
yeah,
of what kind of friends the children make.
And also, parents should be the ones who you should always tell your secrets to. So they should always be informed, even through the child telling them themselves, like that they should have that connection with the child so the child feels comfortable to tell them anything or everything. You know?
Yeah, that's right. And one way to make sure that what kind of a friend your child chooses, for example, if the child has reached an age of 8-9 years old and you know that she has a friend, call the child's friend at home. See the child, talk to the child, see what ideas they have.
Yeah.
See, you know, whether they would be a good friend or not. Because we have it in the Holy Quran that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, on the day when the unjust will bite their hands, regretfully saying that, would that we had taken away with the messenger, woe to us, would that we had been friends with so and so. He led us away from the true guidance after it had come to us. So friends play an important role in the sense that they would lead a person to the right way or the wrong way.
Yeah.
Being influenced with friends is very important.
There's so much emphasis laid on the right friends to choose. And also because generally it is said that they look at your friends to know who you are.
Yeah, so that's right.
We should be careful who we keep as
so friends. Because even they pick up each other's mannerisms, the way of speech, because it's with a friend mostly. Mostly you get a friend in school or in such instances where you're mostly with a person and you find that person good for you. Then you feel attracted to that person and you start to pick up their mannerisms, their way of speech, their way of talking. Sometimes you want to even look like them.
Yeah.
It's like a role model for you, you know. But your age mate, whom you could talk to, whom you could relate to.
Exactly.
So, of course, friends are very necessary. But not in the way that they can lead you so far that you can go astray and behave whatever they are behaving. The parents should teach the right attitude to the child that, you know, nobody, first of all, can be perfect. All the good values that you get are from home.
Yeah.
Remember never to compare that, you know, my friend is so and so and in home we are exactly. So you will never find an atmosphere like the home which offers you so much love, so much respect. A friend could be useful for you, that it passes your time, makes you happy, jokes with you, they have fun together, but nothing can replace a home. These things, as the child starts understanding, should be given, you know, a pep talk about.
We don't want the child to get attached to the friend as more than the child is attached to the parent, which unfortunately we see is happening sometimes. Unfortunately, that's all the time that we have, but thank you very much for enlightening us about this, because this is definitely one of the common problems that are, you know, affecting our children today. Dear audience, thank you for joining us on the program. If you have any questions, comments or suggestions, please contact us at our email englishradio@irib.ir and visit us at our website parstoday.com. Inshallah, till the next episode, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Islam solves all of its problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned, perfect with no flaws at all, are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.